Tantor Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents Particle Physics, A Very Short Introduction, by Frank Close. Narrated by Mike Cooper. Publisher's note. This audiobook includes bonus material. Please visit tantor.com and type Particle Physics into the search box. Follow the link to the book's page, then, under the Supplemental Content section, please enter the access code MATTER and then click the Unlock button to access the bonus material. The code should be entered in all lowercase letters. All figures and tables referenced in this audiobook can be found in the bonus material. Foreword. We are made of atoms. With each breath, you inhale 10 billion trillion atoms of oxygen, which gives some idea of how small each one is. All of them, together with the carbon atoms in your skin, and indeed everything else on Earth, were cooked in a star some 5 billion years ago. So you were made of stuff that is as old as the planet, one-third as old as the universe, though this is the first time that those atoms have been gathered together such that they think that they are you. Particle physics is the subject that has shown how matter is built and which is beginning to explain where it all came from. It has revealed the existence of a ubiquitous essence known as the Higgs field, which gives mass to matter's fundamental particles. In huge accelerators, several miles in length, we can speed pieces of atoms, particles such as electrons and protons, or even exotic pieces of antimatter, and smash them into one another. In so doing, we're creating, for a brief moment, in a small region of space, an intense concentration of energy which replicates the nature of the universe as it was within a split second of the original Big Bang. Thus, we're learning about our origins. Discovering the nature of the atom 100 years ago was relatively simple. Atoms are ubiquitous in matter all around, and teasing out their secrets could be done with apparatus on a tabletop. Investigating how matter emerged from creation is another challenge entirely. There is no Big Bang apparatus for purchase in the scientific catalogues. The basic pieces that create the beams of particles, speed them to within an iota of the speed of light, smash them together, and then record the results for analysis, all have to be made by teams of specialists. That we can do so is the culmination of a century of discovery and technological progress. It is a big and expensive endeavour, but it is the only way that we know to answer such profound questions. In the course of doing so, unexpected tools and inventions have been made. Antimatter and sophisticated particle detectors are now used in medical imaging. Data acquisition systems designed at CERN, the European Council for Nuclear Research, led to the invention of the World Wide Web. These are but some of the spin-offs from high-energy particle physics. The applications of the technology and discoveries made in high-energy physics are legion, but it is not with this technological aim that the subject is pursued. The drive is curiosity, the desire to know what we're made of, where it came from, and why the laws of the universe are so finely balanced that we have evolved. In this very short introduction, I hope to give you a sense of what we have found and some of the major questions that are now confronting us. I am indebted to Lather Menon at Oxford University Press for encouraging me to produce this new edition, and to Alphonse Weber for his advice on some aspects of experimental particle physics. Chapter 1. Journey to the Centre of the Universe. Matter. On the 4th of July 2012, scientific epochs changed. That day, at CERN, the particle physics laboratory in Geneva, discovery was announced of a new particle, the Higgs boson. This moment marked the end of the beginning in the quest for matter's fundamental pieces and the laws that govern their behaviour. That the Higgs boson is the only single particle to have been named for one person itself hints at its unique role. That day marked the end of the pre-Higgs era, which had extended over 2,000 years since the time when the ancient Greeks believed that everything is made from a few basic elements. In the heat of the Big Bang, Higgs bosons filled the infant universe. If conditions allow, bosons can mingle in large numbers. Boson is the descriptive name given to the species of particles that have that tendency, unlike fermions, which work more discreetly. This is what happened to those Higgs bosons when the universe aged and cooled. They coalesced and today slumber in a quiescent, ubiquitous field. To resurrect Higgs bosons from that field, it is necessary to recreate the heat energy that was prevalent in the early universe. That is what particle physics experiments at CERN can do, for brief moments, in a small region of space. Discovery of the Higgs boson confirms that we're immersed in that all-pervading field. Its nature is yet a mystery, but its implications are not. Its presence gives rise to structure rather than a homogeneous goo. The interaction of fundamental particles with this field gives them mass, enabling structures like atoms and molecules, the templates of life. Most of this book introduces what we know about the fundamental particles of matter and their role in building the universe at large during the pre-Higgs era. As to why they have these specific properties and not others, we do not know. Finding out is a goal for the post-Higgs era, which we shall meet at the end of the book. The ancient Greeks' idea was basically correct. It was the details that were wrong. Their earth, air, fire, and water are made of what today we know as the chemical elements. Pure water is made from two, hydrogen and oxygen. Air is largely made from nitrogen and oxygen, with a dash of carbon and argon. The Earth's crust contains most of the 90 naturally occurring elements, primarily oxygen, silicon, and iron, mixed with carbon, phosphorus, and many others that you may never have heard of, such as ruthenium, holmium, and rhodium. The abundance of the elements varies widely, and as a rough rule, the ones that you think of first are among the most common, while the ones that you've never heard of are the rarest. Thus, oxygen is the winner. With each breath, you inhale 10 billion trillion atoms of it, so do the other 8 billion humans on the planet, plus innumerable animals, and there are plenty more oxygen atoms around doing other things. As you exhale, these atoms are emitted, entrapped with carbon to make molecules of carbon dioxide, the fuel for trees and plants. The numbers are vast, and the names of oxygen and carbon are in everyone's lexicon. Contrast this with astatine or francium. Even if you have heard of them, you are unlikely to have come into contact with any, as it is estimated that there is less than an ounce of astatine in the Earth's crust, and as for francium, it has even been claimed that at any instant there are at most 20 atoms of it around. An atom is the smallest piece of an element that can exist and still be recognized as that element. Nearly all of these elements, such as the oxygen that you breathe and the carbon in your skin, were made in stars about 5 billion years ago, at around the time that the Earth was first forming. Hydrogen and helium are even older, most hydrogen having been made soon after the Big Bang, later to provide the fuel of the stars within which the other elements would be created. 100 years ago, atoms were thought to be small, impenetrable objects, like miniature versions of billiard balls, perhaps. Today, we know that each atom has a rich labyrinth of inner structure. At its center is a dense, compact nucleus, which accounts for all but a trifle of the atom's mass and carries positive electrical charge. In the outer regions of the atom, there are tiny lightweight particles known as electrons. An electron has negative electric charge, and it is the mutual attraction of opposite charges that keeps these negatively charged electrons gyrating around the central, positively charged nucleus. The dot at the end of a sentence in printed text contains some 100 billion atoms of carbon. To see one of these with the naked eye, you would need to magnify the dot to be 100 meters across. While huge, this is still imaginable. But to see the atomic nucleus, you would need that dot to be enlarged to 10,000 kilometers, as big as the Earth from pole to pole. Between the compact central nucleus and the remote whirling electrons, atoms are mostly empty space. That is what many books assert, and while that may be true for the particles that make up an atom, it is only half the story. That space is filled with electric and magnetic force fields so powerful that they would stop you in an instant if you tried to enter the atom. It is these forces that give solidity to matter, even while its atoms are, supposedly, empty. As you are listening to this, you are suspended an atom's breadth above the atoms in your chair due to these forces. Powerful though these electric and magnetic forces are, they're trifling compared to yet stronger forces at work within the atomic nucleus. Disrupt the effects of these strong forces and you can release nuclear power. Disrupt the electric and magnetic forces and you get the more ambient effects of chemistry and the biochemistry of life. These day-to-day familiar effects are due to the electrons in the outer reaches of atoms, far from the nucleus. Such electrons in neighboring atoms may swap places, thereby helping to link the atoms together, making a molecule. It is the wanderings of these electrons that lead to chemistry, biology, and life. This book is not about those subjects, which deal with the collective behavior of many atoms. By contrast, we want to journey into the atom and understand what is there. Inside the atom. An electron appears to be truly fundamental. If it has any inner structure of its own, we have yet to discover it. The central nucleus, however, is built from further particles, known as protons and neutrons. A proton is positively charged. The protons provide the total positive charge of the nucleus. The more protons there are in the nucleus, the greater is its charge, and in turn, the more electrons can be held like satellites around it to make an atom in which the positive and negative charges counterbalance, leaving the atom overall neutral. Thus it is that, although intense electrical forces are at work deep within the atoms of our body, we're not much aware of them, nor are we ourselves electrically charged. The atom of the simplest element, hydrogen, normally consists of a single proton and a single electron. The number of protons in the nucleus is what differentiates one element from another. A cluster of 6 protons forms the nucleus of the carbon atom. Iron has 26, and uranium 92. Opposite charges attract, but like charges repel. So it is a wonder that protons, which are mutually repelling one another by this electrical force, manage to stay together in the confines of the nucleus. The reason is that when 2 protons touch, they grip one another tightly by what is known as the strong force. This attractive force is much more powerful than the electrical repulsion, and so it is that the nuclei of our atoms do not spontaneously explode. However, you cannot put too many protons in close quarters. Eventually, the electrical disruption is too much. This is one reason why there is a heaviest naturally occurring element, uranium, with 92 protons in each nucleus. Pack more protons than this together, and the nucleus cannot survive. Beyond uranium are highly radioactive elements, such as plutonium, whose instability is infamous. Atomic nuclei of all elements beyond hydrogen contain protons and also neutrons. The neutron is, in effect, an electrically neutral version of the proton. It has the same size, and, to within a fraction of a percentage, the same mass as a proton. Neutrons grip one another with the same strength that protons do. Having no electrical charge, they feel no electrical disruption, unlike protons. As a result, neutrons add to the mass of a nucleus and to the overall strong attractive force and thereby help to stabilize the nucleus. When neutrons are in this environment, such as when part of the nucleus of an iron atom, they may survive unchanged for billions of years. However, away from such a compact clustering, an isolated neutron is unstable. This is because a free neutron is a mere 1.4 parts in a thousand more massive than a proton, and by Einstein's equivalence of mass and energy, E equals mc squared, contains correspondingly more energy. Nature seeks to find stability by minimizing this energy. It does so thanks to a feeble force known as the weak force, one of whose effects is to destroy the neutron, converting it into a proton. This can even happen when too many neutrons are packed with protons in a nucleus. The effect of such a conversion here is to change the nucleus of one element into another. This transmutation of the elements is the seed of radioactivity and nuclear power. Magnify a neutron or proton 1,000 times, and you'll discern that they too have a rich internal structure. Like a swarm of bees, which seen from afar appears as a dark spot, whereas a close-up view shows the cloud buzzing with energy, so it is with the neutron or proton. On a low-powered image, they appear like simple spots, but when viewed with a high-resolution microscope, they're found to be clusters of smaller particles called quarks. Let's take up the analogy of the full stop once more. We had to enlarge it to 100 meters to see an atom with the naked eye, to the diameter of the planet to see the nucleus. To reveal the quarks, we would need to expand the dot out to the moon and then keep on going another 20 times further. In summary, the underlying structure of the atom is beyond real imagination. We have at last reached the fundamental particles of matter as we currently know them. The electrons and the quarks are like the letters of nature's alphabet, the basic pieces from which all can be constructed. If there is something more primary, like the dot and dash of Morse code, we do not know for certain what it is. There is speculation that if you could magnify an electron or a quark another billion times, you would discover the underlying Morse code to be like strings, which are vibrating in a universe that is revealed to have more dimensions than the three, space and one, time, of which we are normally aware. Whether this is the answer or not is for the future. I want to tell you something of how we came to know of the electron and the quarks, who they are, how they behave, and what questions confront us. Forces. If the electrons and quarks are like the letters, then there are also analogues of the grammar, the rules that glue letters into words, sentences, and literature. For the universe, this glue is what we call the fundamental forces. There are four of them, of which gravity is the most familiar. Gravity is the force that rules for bulk matter. Matter is held together by the electromagnetic force. It is this that holds electrons in atoms and links atoms to one another to make molecules and larger structures. Within and around the nucleus we find the other two forces, the strong and weak. The strong force glues the quarks into the small spheres that we call protons or neutrons. In turn, these are held closely packed in the atomic nucleus. The weak force changes one variety of particle into another, such as in certain forms of radioactivity. It can change a proton into a neutron or vice versa, leading to transmutation of the elements. In so doing, it also liberates particles known as neutrinos. These are lightweight, flighty neutral particles that respond only to the weak and gravitational forces. Millions of them are passing through you right now. They come from the natural radioactivity in the rocks beneath your feet, but the majority have come from the sun, having been produced in its central nuclear furnace, and even from the Big Bang itself. For matter on Earth, and most of what we can see in the cosmos, this is the total cast of characters that you will need to meet. To make everything hereabouts requires the ingredients of electron and neutrino, and two varieties of quark, known as up and down, which seed the neutrons and protons of atomic nuclei. The four fundamental forces then act on these basic particles in selective ways, building up matter in bulk, and eventually you, me, the world about us, and most of the visible universe. As a picture is said to be worth a thousand words, I summarize the story so far in the figures showing the inner structure of an atom and the forces of nature. How do we know this? An important part of our story will be how we know these things. To sense the universe at all scales, from the vast extent of galaxies down to the unimaginably small distances within the atomic nucleus, requires that we expand our senses by using instruments. Telescopes enable us to look outwards, and microscopes reveal what things are like at small distances. To look inside the atomic nucleus requires special types of microscope known as particle accelerators. By the use of electric fields, electrically charged particles, such as electrons or protons, are accelerated to within a fraction of the speed of light and then smashed into targets of matter or head-on into one another. The results of such collisions can reveal the deep structure of matter. They not only show the quarks that seed the atomic nucleus, but have also revealed exotic forms of matter with whimsical names, strange, charm, bottom and top, and seemingly heavier forms of the electron, known as the muon and tau. These play no obvious role in the matter that we normally find on Earth, and it is not completely understood why nature uses them. Answering such questions is one of the challenges currently facing us. Although these exotic forms are not prevalent today, it appears that they were abundant in the first moments after the Big Bang, which heralded the start of our material universe. This insight has also come from the results of high-energy particle experiments and a profound realization of what these experiments are doing. For 50 years, the focus of high-energy particle physics was to reveal the deep inner structure of matter and to understand the exotic forms of matter that had unexpectedly shown up. In the last quarter of the 20th century, a profound view of the universe emerged. that the material universe of today has emerged from a hot big bang, and that the collisions between subatomic particles are capable of recreating, momentarily, the conditions that were prevalent at that early epoch. Thus, today, we view the collisions between high-energy particles as a means of studying the phenomena that ruled when the universe was newly born. We can study how matter was created and discover what varieties there were. From this, we can construct the story of how the material universe has developed from that original hot cauldron to the cool conditions here on Earth today, where matter is made from electrons without need for muons and taus, and where the seeds of atomic nuclei are just the up and down quarks without need for strange or charming stuff. In very broad terms, this is the story of what has happened. The matter that was born in the hot Big Bang consisted of quarks and particles like the electron. The universe was filled with a ubiquitous essence known as the Higgs field, but for which the vacuum of space would have been unstable. Interactions between the fundamental particles and the Higgs field gave particles mass. Why these masses have their specific values, we do not yet know. As concerns the quarks, the strange, charm, bottom and top varieties are highly unstable and they die out within a fraction of a second, the weak force converting them into their more stable progeny, the up and down varieties, which survive within us today. A similar story took place for the electron and its heavier versions, the muon and tau. This latter pair are also unstable and died out, courtesy of the weak force, leaving the electron as survivor. In the process of these decays, lots of neutrinos and electromagnetic radiation were also produced, which continue to swarm throughout the universe some 14 billion years later. The up and down quarks and the electrons were the survivors while the universe was still very young and hot. As it cooled, the quarks were stuck to one another, forming protons and neutrons. The mutual gravitational attraction among these particles gathered them into large clouds that were primeval stars. As they bumped into one another in the heart of these stars, the protons and neutrons built up the seeds of heavier elements. Some stars became unstable and exploded, ejecting these atomic nuclei into space, where they trapped electrons to form atoms of matter as we know it. That is what we believe occurred some 5 billion years ago when our solar system was forming. Those atoms from a long-dead supernova are what make you and me today. What we can now do in experiments is, in effect, reverse the process and observe matter change back into its original primeval forms. Heat matter to a few thousand degrees and its atoms ionize. Electrons are separated from the central nuclei. That is how it is inside the Sun. The Sun is a plasma, that is, gases of electrically charged electrons and protons swirling independently. At even higher temperatures, typical of the conditions that can be reached in relatively small high-energy accelerators, the nuclei are disrupted into their constituent protons and neutrons. At yet higher energies, these in turn melt into a plasma of freely flowing quarks. At the extreme energies, accessible by CERN's Large Hadron Collider, it has proved possible to excite the Higgs field, forming Higgs bosons. Thus, we know we are immersed in this ubiquitous field, which gives fundamental particles their mass. How this all happened, how we know, and what we've discovered are the themes of this very short introduction. Chapter 2. How big and small are big and small? From quarks to quasars. The universe isn't the same everywhere. The Sun and stars are much hotter than the Earth, and matter takes on different forms, but it is ultimately made of the same stuff. Atoms are very small, the cosmos is very big. How do they compare with everyday things? Individual stars are huge and visible to the naked eye over vast distances. This is in stark contrast to their basic components, the particles that eventually make up atoms. It would take about 1 billion atoms placed on top of one another to reach your head. It would take a similar number of people, head to toe, to give the diameter of the Sun. So this places the human measuring scale roughly in the middle between those of the Sun and an atom. The particles that make up atoms, the electrons that form the outer regions, and the quarks, which are the ultimate seeds of the central nucleus, are themselves a further factor of about 1 billion smaller than the atomic whole. A fully grown human is a bit less than 2 meters tall. For much of what we will meet in this book, orders of magnitude are more important than precise values. So, to set the scale, I will take humans to be about 1 meter in order of magnitude. This means we are much bigger than 1/10 of a meter, or 10^-1 meters, and correspondingly smaller than 10 meters. Then, going to the large scales of astronomy, we have the radius of the Earth, some 10^7 meters, that is 1 followed by 7 zeros. That of the Sun is 10^9 meters. Our orbit around the Sun is 10^11 meters, or in more readable units, 100 million kilometers. For later reference, note that the relative sizes of the Earth, Sun, and our orbit are factors of about 100. Distances greater than this become increasingly hard to visualize, with large numbers of zeros when expressed in meters, so a new unit is used, the light year. Light travels at 300,000 kilometers per second. This is fast, but not infinite. It takes light a nanosecond, that is 10^-9 seconds, to travel 30 centimeters, which is about the size of your foot. Modern computers operate on such timescales, and such microtimes will become central when we enter the world within the atom. For the moment, we're heading to the other extreme, the very large distances of the cosmos, and the long times that it takes for light to travel from remote galaxies to our eyes here. It takes light 8 minutes to travel the 150 kilometers from the Sun, so we say the Sun is 8 light minutes away. It takes a year for light to travel 10^16 meters, and so this distance is referred to as a light year. Our Milky Way galaxy extends for 10^21 meters, or some 100,000 light years. Galaxies cluster together in groups, extending over 10 million light years. These clusters are themselves grouped into superclusters, about 100 million light years in extent, or 10^24 meters. The extent of the visible universe is some 10 billion light years, or 10^26 meters. These actual numbers are not too important, but notice how the universe is not homogeneous and instead is clustered into distinct structures. Superclusters, clusters of galaxies, and individual galaxies such as our own, with each being roughly 100 times smaller than its predecessor. When we enter the micro-world, we will once again experience such layers of structure, but on a much emptier scale, not 1/100th, but more like 1/10,000th. Having made a voyage out into the large scales of space, let's now take the opposite direction into the micro-world of atoms and their internal structure. With our unaided naked eye, we can resolve individual pieces of dust, say, that are as small as 1/10 to 1/100th of a millimeter, 10^-4 to 10^-5 meters. This is at the upper end of the size of bacteria. Light is a form of electromagnetic wave, and the wavelength of visible light that we see as the rainbow spans 10^-6 to 10^-7 meters. Atoms are 1,000 times smaller than this, some 10^-10 meters. It is the fact that atoms are so much smaller than the wavelength of visible light that puts them beyond the reach of our normal vision. Everything on Earth is made from atoms. Every element has its smallest piece, far too small to see by eye, but real nonetheless, as special instruments can show. To recap from Chapter 1, atoms are made of smaller particles. Electrons whirl in their remote reaches. At their heart is the compact, massive atomic nucleus. The nucleus has a structure of its own, consisting of protons and neutrons, which in turn are made of yet smaller particles, the quarks. Quarks and electrons are the seeds of matter as we find it on Earth. Whereas the atom is typically 10^-10 meters across, its central nucleus measures only about 10^-14 to 10^-15 meters. So beware the oft-quoted analogy that atoms are like miniature solar systems, with the planetary electrons encircling the nuclear sun. The real solar system has a factor of 1/100th between our orbit and the size of the central sun. The atom is far emptier, with 1/10,000th as the corresponding ratio between the extent of its central nucleus and the radius of the atom. And this emptiness continues. Individual protons and neutrons are about 10 to the power minus 15 meters in diameter and are in turn made of yet smaller particles known as quarks. If quarks and electrons have any intrinsic size, it is too small for us to measure. All that we can say for sure is that it is no bigger than 10 to the power minus 18 meters. So here again, we see that the relative size of quark to proton.
Sample complete. Ready to continue?